This is us learning in public, trying to...
Literally learning in public.
Yeah.
We were at the Vancouver Public Library. Yes. There are glass doors. Yes. We were literally learning in public.
Pulling back the curtain of silence.
And learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala. This is Scene. Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections.
Being a queer brown woman, I sometimes feel like the entire world is set up to make me doubt myself, because power and wealth is maintained through making people like me small and quiet. But it's actually taken a lot of work for me to get to that understanding of the systems that are working against me. I used to feel like I was just incompetent at life and generally worse than other people. There were things that I wanted to do, but I doubted myself so much that I didn't think it was even possible to do them. And there were a lot of possibilities that I didn't even dream for myself because I was so unable to see myself as someone who could make those dreams happen. I was very susceptible to outside influences because with my own overwhelming insecurities, if someone came along who seemed confident, I thought they must know better than I did. It was getting into closer relationship with other women of color, and in particular other queer and trans people of color, that changed everything for me. Because in my personal life and in my work as a therapist, I've sat with so many absolutely brilliant, talented, deeply compassionate people of color who were completely unable to see how incredible they were. Mm. And who were so overcome with self-doubt and shame. And that started to break the spell for me. It made me realize that those terrible things I thought about myself weren't true. They were a product of internalizing a lot of bullshit that I'd learned from toxic people in my life and from our incredibly oppressive culture. So let me tell you, it's been a journey from where I was then to where I am now. And that's a place where I've started to step into my own power and create a life and a way of being that I couldn't have imagined before. And of course, it's an ongoing process. So I'm coming into this with as much desire to learn as to share things that I've learned. Mm-hmm. What about you, Nick? I imagine that, you know, like most of us, you've probably struggled with self-doubt at times.
Fuck yes. Yeah. Oh my God, yes. As you're talking about, like, not imagining what you can be because you didn't see people that reflected your own identity, that shit is so fucking real.
Yeah.
Like, that has kept me in a state of mind where I haven't been able to imagine or dream big for myself. Until recently, very recently, like this podcast, things yeah. like, you know, creative stuff that puts your shit out there
right.
that really steps into yourself a little bit more. But fuck yeah, like I definitely, a lot of self-doubt, a lot of feeling like, how dare I take up any space?
Yes.
I gotta be a small, like, and I'm not like a tiny person, I think we're the same height, but I'm not, I'm not a small person, but just like feeling like you gotta fold into yourself a little bit more. But interestingly enough, I think it came across to a lot of people, like the way that I would play things off was like confident all the time. But internally, it was like, help me. Yeah. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, you know?
Yeah. But you feel like you've started to get to know your power.
Fuck yeah, yeah. But it's like, it's been, I'm 27, maybe the past 3 years, 2 years of like actually looking at myself and feeling so much better about the person that I see because I know that I'm showing up for that bitch in the mirror.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's big. So in this episode, we're going to talk about what it means to step into your power and what might support us to move more fully into the power that we all deserve to be in touch with. So let's just start, though, by getting a little clearer on what we mean when we talk about stepping into your power. First, I want to share a definition that I believe came from Robert Jones Jr., son of Baldwin, on social media. So he said that power over is the dominion over others, whereas empowerment is the dominion over oneself. And we're talking about the latter. So when we talk about stepping into our power, we're not talking about something that we would use to control or harm others. Mm. We're talking about something that we can find in ourselves. We're talking about a way of being. We're talking about ways we can feel powerful and channel power in a way that uplifts ourselves and hopefully others. And we're talking about something that we can have even without access to very much systemic power. Do you have anything to add to that? Or what does stepping into your power mean to you?
Yeah, I don't have anything to add. I think stepping into my power, it means being comfortable with the person that I am, having a vision for the person that I want to be, and then making moves to get there. That's what stepping into my power has felt like. And it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't have much to do with having structural power necessarily. I think having structural power is really fucking helpful, but it really is more about that sort of like wealth that comes from within, or like the generative thing that you create for yourself it doesn't necessarily have to be attached to like systems and structures and external things.
Yeah. Does that make sense? Yes. So I think one of the foundations of stepping into our power, something that we need to build so that we're able to start to step into our power, it's believing ourselves.
Yes. And believing ourselves?
Yes. I did not say believing in ourselves, although, I mean, that's important too.
Yes.
But I really want to talk about believing ourselves because I think it's an even more fundamental part of owning our power.
I love the nuance. Yes. I'm so excited that you said that. I'm like, she took out a word. Not believing in. Believing. But that's like, no, I'm with you. Take me there. Yeah.
Yes. So thank you so much for your excitement. So most people who experience oppression of any kind, we've been taught explicitly or implicitly that our feelings are wrong.
Yeah.
True. We're taught that our perceptions of reality are wrong because our society is set up in a way that harms us for the benefit of others. And when we react to being harmed or we show symptoms of having been harmed or we point out harm that we see to others around us, we're dismissed or we're demonized or we're otherwise undermined. And so most of us, at least on some level, we start to actually believe that we are wrong. And it can be really confusing because often there's a part of us that knows that we're right.
Yep.
Many of us have at least some analysis of the racism and the transphobia or the homophobia, whatever else we experience. But we're humans and we're very much connected to each other. And the way people treat us, it matters. Right? It
affects us. Like, it's like if somebody's always, if you're coming out here saying that like I'm experiencing this form of oppression and the response you get back from everybody is like you're literally out to lunch, that is not happening. Then you're just going to be like, okay, so to keep things cool, to be around other people, I'm not going to talk about all the shit that I think I experienced because maybe my thoughts aren't real. Or maybe like what everybody else's opinion is like actually valid because they, you know, everybody else is saying that I'm out to lunch, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes it's even the opposite. Like sometimes we stand our ground, but the seeds of doubt start to creep in.
Yeah, that's true. Right. That's so true. For myself, I think that looks like believing myself and then still making excuses like, oh, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I didn't handle that right,
or saying like that person was being racist but then acting as if they weren't.
Yeah,
like keeping that person as a close friend.
Yes,
because there's this disconnect happening for you.
I was gonna say it feels like a cognitive dissonance between like what we know in our heads and how we feel in our bodies and in our hearts.
Yeah,
and it's interesting even more because you'll know it intellectually and you'll feel the racism in your heart. Like, you know, you feel it in your body, but then it's like, hey, racism that I felt in my body. Tell my brain and my like connect.
Yeah.
Like, let me with this information that I know that I felt and that I heard and that I experienced. Now, what am I gonna do? And sometimes it's like, oh, I'm gonna still sit with this shit.
Yeah, it's like I'm being defensive in my own head.
Yeah.
Like even in my own head, I'm in loops, like convincing myself, being like, no, it is because this is what happened. But the fact that I'm in that loop at all, it's because the seeds of doubt have crept in.
100%.
I'm in this like shaky ground where one part of me believes it and another part of me won't believe it.
Dude, this is making me feel so slightly activated because I'm thinking about that ending of a friendship that happened recently with that fucking wicked white woman who shall not be named. But that's what it was. It was like a lot of experiencing the actual trauma of her racist ass friends and then her standing up for her racist ass friends and then having to deal with her. Mm-hmm. And then thinking to myself, maybe I'm super sensitive. Maybe I don't have a good grip on reality. Maybe my boundaries are kind of too, like, maybe. And just, like, feeling like I should give this person another chance to show up for themselves, even though they, like, show their whole entire ass the entire time.
Exactly.
What is up with that?
Here's the thing.
Yes.
Our feelings are information.
Mm.
And when we have a strong, healthy connection with ourselves, we're able to clearly hear that information and take it in along with other kinds of information we have available to us, like the knowledge that we get from the world around us and information that we get from other people. And we can use all of those sources of information to respond in the ways that we might choose to. But when we learn that our thoughts and feelings are wrong, then we stop listening to the information that they're trying to give us. And that's information that we can't get anywhere else.
Yeah, that's so true. Like, you might be able to get it from other people who have similar experiences to you, but somebody telling you shit and then your body telling you shit, different.
It's different.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They haven't experienced your life still.
Yeah.
Anything else, any other type of knowledge, you might be able to get it in different sources. But the knowledge that you get from the feelings in your own body, there's no replacement for that.
Literally none.
And that's maybe the single most powerful guiding force we have available to us because it is so personalized to us.
Oh man, I fucking love this. This is awesome. I feel like I'm in therapy myself.
That's what I do.
Free session.
And here's the other thing. As much as it may not feel like it sometimes, our feelings make sense. They really do. And when it seems like they don't, it's usually because there's some part of our experience that we're not able to connect with. Mm. So let me give an example.
Okay.
When I was an undergrad, I started having really bad panic symptoms. I constantly experienced sensations and feelings that convinced me that I was having a heart attack. And it got really bad, and I ended up being referred to a psychiatrist, and he diagnosed me with panic disorder. And he said that it was just a physiological thing, that I was having panic attacks that were essentially caused by nothing. And he even went so far as to tell me that I shouldn't try to find causes for it because it might make me superstitious, like thinking that pea soup causes a panic attack.
A whole ass psychiatrist told you that?
Yeah, and that was his example too, pea soup.
Yo, fuck your pea soup. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so spoiler alert. That was not helpful to me.
Who is that helpful to? Like,
I continue to have, and it wasn't even like panic attacks by definition last for 2 minutes or less. Mine was like hours and hours on end. Anyways, so that wasn't helpful. But eventually, I was blessed enough to find a really good therapist who happened to be a woman of color.
Coincidence.
Yeah. And she actually believed me when I told her about myself. So whereas when I told that psychiatrist that I had been sexually assaulted, he dismissed my stories and he said it really wasn't a big deal. And sometimes people get mixed messages was a thing that he said.
That's so messed up, dude.
Yeah, all kinds of victim blaming bullshit that made no sense. And I knew that he was wrong to say it. I did know that he was wrong.
Yeah.
But I don't think I realized how much it affected me because it's that cognitive dissonance we talked about where I knew, but it made me doubt myself on a subconscious level. Even my conscious mind was holding on. No, I know that's victim blaming. I know that's wrong. Mm-hmm. But somewhere deep in my system, that got in there because he's this cishet white dude. He was a head of psychiatry at UBC.
Like, as in, when you say it got in there, you mean like in some parts of you, maybe even small parts of you, you believed what he was saying?
Because I still listened to his diagnosis and I still listened to his advice for how to handle it.
But also he had incredible amounts of power over you. I mean, it's not like easy for anyone. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
it's 19 or something. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just like flabbergasted by this entire
thing. Yeah, like, I mean, I've told the psychiatrist I see now about this and he's like, what? He's shocked. Yeah. I can't stress enough that was the head of psychiatry at UBC.
That's fucked up.
Anyways. With this new therapist, whenever I would have an episode of panic, she would ask me about what happened in the day leading up to it. And surprise, we would always find triggers, and they were related to my experiences of violence. And that knowledge helped me to cut people out of my life who were violent or who were complicit in the violence against me. It helped me understand what was wrong and start a real healing process. It galvanized me because it made me understand my social context and how violence wasn't just these isolated incidents, but this whole culture. And it put me on the path that led to the work that I do now. So I was able to take powerful actions in response to the knowledge that I got from believing myself and believing my feelings. And this is a really good example to build on what you said in our anger episode, that feelings are valid but not necessarily correct. Because on the surface, my body was telling me I was having a heart attack. I was not. It was incorrect.
Yeah.
But it was actually telling me a deeper truth, which was that I was experiencing violence.
Yeah, something wasn't right.
A very real danger.
Absolutely.
It wasn't the heart attack, but there was a deeper truth to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So to connect this back to owning your power, there's the saying that knowledge is power.
Yeah.
Right? And as we've said before, white supremacy, colonialism, patriarchy, all of these systems, they invalidate our ways of knowing. And as embodied creatures, everything we know is through our bodies. And it's that knowledge that makes us powerful.
Yeah.
Right?
And the more we're so disassociated from our bodies, the less knowledge we can actually get from our bodies in general. And then it's like, what information do we get that supersedes or like takes more precedence over what our bodies are telling us?
Yeah.
And like, how fucked up could that knowledge be?
Exactly. You know? This is the basis from which we can question false authority.
Ah.
We're hearing something by somebody who sounds very confident or who is in a position of power, it's the feelings in our body that can start to tell us, something's not right here. And so despite maybe this person has gone to school for many years for this, maybe they are in a position of power, maybe I have no training and no experience in this, but I know something's not right.
Yeah.
Again, I can't get that anywhere else other than from my own system.
I think that's so powerful, especially I'm thinking specifically your experience that you just shared on like just engaging healthcare and like the power differentials and stuff like that. I've had so many conversations with friends who've had really poor experiences with healthcare providers, where it's like they walk in, they have these, like, you know, this is how I'm presenting, these are the things that are going wrong in my body or whatever. And the response is always like, that's not true. You know how your body is normally. How can you be wrong about how your body is acting differently?
Right.
You know. Yeah. Like, you are the only one who knows that shit.
Yeah.
Degree or no degree.
Yeah, exactly.
Ugh.
Yeah. And it can just be so hard to rest on that knowledge when you come up into these systems of power.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what self-doubt is. It's feeling like, I don't know. I don't know what to do. And then owning your power is when you start to trust yourself and what you know to be true.
I love it all. It also makes me feel like I got hella work to do.
We all do. We right? all yeah. do. Yeah.
Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.
Another big part, I think, of stepping into our power is connecting to our values. Because I don't actually think that we can ultimately be that powerful if everything we do is just in service of us as individuals. One human, it's nothing, right? We're mortal. We're deeply flawed. We're just one tiny piece of something much bigger. So I've never been able to get to a place of power by thinking about
only kind of yourself.
Yeah, only myself, or like status or things that come from or the elevation of me as a person.
You mean like external things, recognition, accolade, money, like all that stuff? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, like those things, you know, money, we need money, right?
And yeah, it's like, I want to be comfortable. Hey.
Yeah, and there might be ways that we need recognition in order to do the things that we want to do in the world. It's not against those things in particular, but when my only motivating force is my own ego or my own thoughts of myself, maybe it's just me. I'm open to being told that it's just me. I've just never found that to be a powerful place to come from. I've never found that very motivating. I've never found that that has nourished me or sustained me or given me the energy that I need to do anything really hard.
Yeah, well, shit's not sustainable too, right? Like, it's like eventually you're going to have a person in your life or around you that is like, your shit stinks. It's not great. Then what do you do? Like, who are you going to be if you don't have somebody gassing you up or external things gassing you up? You know what I'm saying?
And what's the point?
Yeah. Like, are we, I don't know. I think I have this existential dread coming over me thinking about getting to a place in my life where my only source of like happiness, joy, and fulfillment comes from like other people telling me that I'm okay and good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for me, it's been connecting to values that's bigger than me. Right. Yep. Because that starts to get my ego out of the way. And I don't mean ego as an arrogance, although I think we probably should get our arrogance out of the way. But I mean it more in the spiritual sense of like the separate self with our little personalities that mask the more expansive nature of who we are and what we're here to do.
Ooh, say that again. That's like so flowery. I was like, I need to write that down in a notebook or something.
Read Eckhart Tolle.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Have you found connecting to your values has helped you to feel more powerful?
You know, I think even you asking me this right now, what are my values? I would say, no, I'm thinking about this because I've never had to, you know, I've worked in organizations and government and stuff like that where it's like, what are our values? Like, what are we trying to provide for our members or whatever the fuck? And I've never done that for myself, actually. So I'm like, my values are honesty, telling the truth, compassion, curiosity, and a heart for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that's definitely guided me into stepping into my power for sure. Because it's like those ideas, those constructs are so much more in line with where I want to be, who I want to be, that like if I have that as a focal point, even if I don't know how much money I'm going to make next year or what job I'm going to have next year or any of those things, if those are my focal points, then I'm obviously going to be working towards that. And like, when you have values, they guide you. When you don't have values, you're guided by whatever the fuck is around you. And when you have got values that are like founded in the well-being of yourself and other people, then you're gonna be good.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, an example of this was when you suggested doing our community event.
Mm-hmm.
I am introvert. I'm shy.
You were straight up like,
I don't like being in groups a lot of the time.
Yes.
But I could recognize that it was a really good idea that we needed more spaces for people of color to talk about these things that we want to talk about.
Yeah.
And that it was a natural extension of this podcast and what we're trying to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so because I really valued what that space was that you were trying to create, and it did align with the values of what I want to do in the world, which is empowering people of color to come together and connect and speak our truths and
build community.
Yeah. Exactly. I was able to just put my insecurities, they were still there, but they could kind of go to the side so that I could do this thing, because it wasn't about me. It was about the work.
Yeah, I'm with you. Thank you for that, though, too. I know that that was something that, I mean, the idea was out there and I was like, this is going to be great. But then as it approached, we were both just like, what the fuck are we doing? You
but
know?
It was great.
But it was great. And it worked out. And it was like, it was a beautiful thing to like come to fruition. And like you said, it got to the point where I started to realize it's bigger than us. Like,
exactly.
It's not about, and even this podcast too, right? It's not like we're talking about our own shit. Like, we're talking about our lived experiences.
Yeah.
We're kikiing and a little boo. But at the same time, I realize that it's not just about our personal lived experience. It's helpful. It's an added value to the podcast. But I think this is more than just you and I.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I mean about connecting with the higher purpose, connecting with your values, connecting with ways that you want to be in service to something bigger than yourself.
Yeah.
So I think that's, I guess when I think about the feeling of stepping into my power, my ego really does go to the side, because I don't really think it's something about me. I don't think it's because I as an individual am like really special and powerful or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a power that it's this bigger force that can come through you.
Yeah.
That you can channel if you get out of your own way and look at what you value and how you can use whatever it is that you have in service of something else that's bigger than you.
I'm wondering if that also is, I'm guessing that that's also something that feeds into your clinical practice.
Absolutely.
Like that's basically what it is, right? Where you realize that you have this skill set and this heart for other people, and specifically for BIPOC, specifically for queer and trans BIPOC. And it's like realizing that it's not about like Lala Mathin like showing up and like doing her thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's about like you showing up, being there to like create the space that allows somebody and invites your client to feel in whatever way they need to, and then be able to like have those feelings and like move through them.
Exactly. It's like I know that I'm able to help to create a space for other people to grow and heal.
Yeah.
And it's not about I'm this talented healer. I'm nothing by myself.
Yeah.
It's about the relationship, and it's about how I'm able to be of service to these people who come in and want to do their work.
It's a beautiful thing, and it's so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm always so curious about people who are like, not to say that you necessarily have to be in like in a field where you're caring for other people, but it always kind of, I guess, fascinates me. And I guess I have a little bit of judgment when people are like, I just want to make money, especially when they like off the face of it. I'm like, you seem like you have had a very privileged life. Like, wouldn't it be nice to have a little bit of yourself that's like in servitude to others, as opposed to just looking at after yourself? So, yeah.
I'm going to think a little bigger, maybe.
just a little bit.
Yeah, if you can. I guess, again, when you're talking about people who are very comfortable, not people who are just focused on money because they don't have it and they need it to live.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like a very big difference. And it's like time and time again, the people who are focused on money because they need it to live are also focused on other things that are like bigger than themselves, like taking care of others.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I also think that stepping into our power means being comfortable with making mistakes and understanding our capacity to cause harm. Because this is the thing, owning our power isn't just about things that make us feel good.
No, not at all. If you know that you're able to do good things, you can also do bad things equally.
Right. Exactly, because the reality is that as human beings that are connected to all of our human and non-human relations, as Indigenous folks have taught me, we impact everything around us. What we do matters, for better or for worse. So it's up to us to be responsible for that impact. Owning your power means being responsible for your power.
Yeah.
And I do want to say, though, because in my work, so many, especially queer and trans people of color, are so overcome with guilt for the ways that they might cause harm by being a part of, you know, these systems, by existing,
yeah,
essentially. And so often it's the people who are doing the least harm and who are trying as hard as they can to do good that are
so preoccupied with
yeah, with it. And I don't want to feed into that,
yeah,
at all, because it's a balance.
Yeah.
And a lot of us who've experienced multiple marginalizations were too focused on potential or actual harm that we've caused. Being accountable is great, but being overwhelmed by shame and guilt because you're human,
yeah,
and because as a human who exists on the earth in the state that it's in, you are going to cause harm at some time.
Yeah. Be gentle with ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. But there's another side of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I want to talk about it, because this is a big part of how we make sure we stay in the zone of empowerment and away from power over. Because there's a lot of people, especially people who have experienced a lot of marginalization, who start to gain power. And then when they maybe unintentionally harm people around them, they're unable to hear that because they are stuck in this mentality of having been so oppressed.
That, like, how dare somebody say that they're being oppressive?
Yeah, they're not able to see how maybe things have changed for them.
Right.
And they actually have a lot more power than they think they do. These are often people who have a lot of unhealed trauma.
Yeah.
And so they're just so caught up in how they've been harmed that they're unable to look at or unwilling to look at how they've harmed others. And I've seen some very notable people who come from huge oppression get into positions of power and
do harm to
and
other
do
people.
Harm, yeah. And do harm and continue to do harm,
mm-hmm,
and can't be called in because they won't hear it.
Yeah. Is that when ego gets in the way, do you think?
I think ego, and I think, again, that unhealed trauma.
Yeah.
Where it's like they're so in this state of having been victimized that that's all they can see.
Yeah, but thanks for adding that nuance, because I think if you assume that it's just ego, you're assuming that the person is doing it for, like, malicious intent, that, mm-hmm, they're doing it, like, out of a bad place. But when you say unhealed trauma, I think of people who definitely know better but haven't been able to figure out how to do better because they're still trying to figure out how to do right by themselves. So it's not as cut and dry.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then, you know, people think sometimes the people who are calling me in or calling me out, they're just threatened by a powerful woman of color. And for sure that happens, right? People absolutely do react negatively to women of color in power. But this is why we need strong relationships, and this is why we need strong tools for self-reflection, because we need to know the difference. And we also need to make room for all of the things, because sometimes someone is overreacting to us because we're women of color, but we're also not acting in the best way.
Yeah.
So people come down harder on us.
Yeah.
And that's not okay, but we also want to look at what we're doing as well.
Like we always say, you can chew gum and walk.
Yes.
It's like you can definitely, like, because it's true. It's not like a one-track thing. There's multiple things happening at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that the kind of strength and power we're trying to develop involves not being reactive. Like, I don't want to be like, oh, well, you said this and I don't like you, so I'm going to do the opposite.
Yeah.
That's the flip side of just automatically following whatever someone says because they're in a position of power, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So where I want to get to is a place where I can discern for myself whether or not I agree with something, regardless of who said it. So,
and that's like where values come in, right? Where, or like, and a good sense of self, not bullshitting yourself when you do harmful shit.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Strong self-reflection. Strong connection with our bodies, because if we're feeling some guilt, we need to check that out. Is that guilt because we've done something wrong, or is it guilt that's been put on us by someone else?
Yeah.
We need to be able to tell the difference. And we need strong relationships. We need relationships with people who are also reflective and insightful, who tell us the truth, who we allow to tell us the truth.
Yeah.
Who we make it safe for them to tell us the truth, even when it's not something we want to hear.
That's a word.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something that Kanye West needs desperately. I just think of, like, all the people around him that are probably, like, super yes people.
Yeah.
Who don't tell him, like, you are literally the wackest dude right now, because they're all on payroll.
Yeah.
And it's like that. It's like, and bring it down to, like, a human earthly scale. I think it's like, if you only have people around you and in your company who are gassing you up all the time and they're not, like, telling you when your shit stinks, mm-hmm, that's not good for you. It's not good for any of us. So people need to be able to check you and be like, you know what? You are acting out of line. Or, you know what? I love you, but
yeah,
get it together.
Absolutely. Let's also talk about some tools to step into our power, mm-hmm. things that can help us. We've talked about connecting with our bodies. I want to talk about it in a slightly different way. Have you seen the documentary Knock Down the House on Netflix?
I have not.
Oh, Nick, you need to watch it. Oh my God, you will love it. Okay, so it follows a few different women who were running for Congress in the 2018 midterms, including
AOC.
AOC, yeah, it focuses on her a lot. And there's this one scene where she's preparing to debate her opponent in the primary race.
I love this. I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. Okay. He was this old white dude who had held the seat for a ridiculously long time. So she's getting ready, and it's her. She's stretching out her arms, saying, "I'm taking up space. I'm taking up space. I'm taking up space," like making herself really big. And she's saying, "I'm experienced enough to do this. I'm knowledgeable enough to do this. I'm mature enough to do this." It was the most beautiful scene. It made me tear up. I watched it like 10 times.
As you're saying that, I'm just like, I want to cry because I've seen the clip on loop on Instagram. And I'm like, I definitely need to watch this. Mm-hmm. I think that's so, like honestly, I just find that as a practice to be something we could be doing like in the morning when we wake up and out of our beds.
Yeah. You know? One of my dearest friends came up to me right before our event started because she could see how nervous I was. Mm-hmm. And she could see me like shrinking and like collapsing over. And so she just came up and like whispered that scene into my ear, and I stretched my arms out and I did the same thing. Like, have you ever tried that in a moment where you're feeling small, super small, scared?
Yeah, definitely. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, but it's wild how hard it can be
to
force yourself to open up and like take up physical space.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's kind of linked to, you know, that whole like take power stances. Like women are usually like in the boardroom, they're like small and whatever. So it's like women should like practice power stances. Mm-hmm. It's like a whole like physiological thing. But it's like, but actually the act of taking up more space, mm-hmm. it sets a trajectory for us to feel more comfortable just like being in our actual bodies.
That's the thing. Our bodies are so connected to our minds and our spirit. So how we experience things through our bodies, it does impact how we feel and how we understand ourselves.
Yeah.
There's a lot of healing that we can do in both directions. Like there's a lot of, you know, emotional healing we can do that can change how we feel in our body, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of work we can do with our body,
like physically,
that can change how we feel emotionally.
Yeah,
there's all kinds of ways that movement can be helpful. I run to songs like Tick Boom by Kaylee 47 or My Power from the Lion King album, because my body feels strong when I'm running, and songs like that exponentially increase that feeling of power for me.
100%.
And music in general can be a really effective way of channeling a certain kind of energy, because when you listen to a song that gives you that feeling of power, invincibility even.
No, it is that. I honestly, like, I love music, so, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, so yes.
Yeah, and once we know how something feels in our bodies, then we know that that's possible for mm-hmm. us, and we can start to access it in other ways.
Yeah.
And then another really important resource in finding our power is through other people. Because we're inherently relational, like we always talk about, it's really hard for us to be in our power if we're in an environment that doesn't support that. And that's why so many folks who experience oppression feel so much self-doubt. And this is why our episode, the last episode on letting go of relationships and situations that don't serve us, was the precursor to this episode. Mm-hmm. Because we have to recognize when something's making us feel insecure or small or weak, and to the best of our ability, we need to move away from that thing. So what I want to focus on now is what can happen when you've cleared that space.
Ooh. So good things, like happy things?
Yes. Okay. My experience has been that so much more of my life is free from trying to prove my worth, free from trying to be believed by people who are not equipped or simply not willing to believe me.
I'm smiling thinking about that. It's
delightful
and delicious.
And it's made so much space for me to grow.
Yeah.
So I want to use our woman of color of every week, Beyonce, as an example here.
It's time for the queen to shine.
Yes, because she, in Life is But a Dream, her documentary, she talked about her decision to end her professional relationship with her father, because there was a lot about that wasn't working for her. And she talked about how hard it was for her and how she stayed too long, and they both kind of knew it was time.
Because he managed her, right?
Or he managed her, for almost her whole career until I think it was 2010 or something that she fired him. And it was only after leaving that relationship that she really came into her own as an artist. She's taken more artistic risks. She's developed her voice, her point of view as an artist. And I think something that's really key in this is the way that she's let her values guide her, because her work feels like someone who is guided by her love of Black people and Black women in particular. Mm-hmm. It feels like she made Brown Skin Girl because she wanted her daughters to grow up in a world where that song exists.
100%.
And I think another thing that's really relevant to the direction she's gone in her career is an ad-lib that she did while recording the song Haunted for her self-titled album, where she said, probably won't make no money off this. Oh,
well, yeah.
I think that she was needing to let go of the expectations that she had for herself and that had been put on her to always debut at number one and sell the most and be the most popular. And similarly, leading up to her iconic Coachella performance.
Maychella.
Yeah. Her mom actually expressed concern that most people wouldn't understand what she was doing because most non-Black people didn't necessarily understand HBCU culture, even in some cases know what HBCUs were.
Yeah.
And she told her mom that she'd reached a point in her career where she'd worked so hard to have a voice and she felt like it was more important for her to say what needed to be said, regardless of how people might receive it, right?
Ugh, I love Beyonce.
I know, I love her so much. And this is another way that we find our power, is by looking at people who embody that for us.
Yeah.
Right? And being inspired by them.
Yes, absolutely. And she's like one of the most inspiring people. How hard she works, her dedication to her craft, and then her clear commitment to uplifting Black women.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And she, I think, has done what's really hard for a lot of us to do and what's really hard for a lot of entertainers to do, which is she adjusted to the new reality, right? Because when you first get into the industry, or when you're trying to get into the industry, you need to appeal to a lot of people, right?
Yeah, you need to play the game.
You need to play the game. And she did that for a really long time. But after she had been on top for a decade, she was able to adjust to the new reality that she didn't actually need to do that anymore. And she could choose to do what felt more interesting, more purposeful to her, what aligned with her values.
Yeah.
And that's why she was able to start to take the creative risks, which, yes, I mean, she's still incredibly successful. She's even more so, but it's not because she's not taking risks. It didn't have to go that way.
No, she could be playing in the cookie cutter mold and doing some stuff that everyone expects her to do, but she continuously pushes the envelope.
And anti-Blackness is so real.
Right.
She could have, you know, she has faced some backlash.
Oh yeah, remember from Lemonade, literally
getting
Formation.
Well, form,
yeah, and like Formation and just like that whole, like the entire music video, the amount of white folks who were like, and like police departments in the states who were like, she's not welcome at our,
exactly,
in our state or our city because she, you know, like,
exactly. But what's happened is that the people who she's for love her even more.
Exactly.
Right? And she obviously has a lot of privilege, but she's an extreme version of what many of us can experience, which is letting go of what doesn't serve us, listening to ourselves, connecting to our values, stepping into our power.